Welcome to The Leap, a success podcast for ambitious leaders. Each week, we bring you the tools, knowledge, and inspiration to fuel your next big leap. Now, here's your host, Harriet Schumacher, leadership expert and executive coach.
Hello. Get my panel set up and underway. So welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for being here and taking time out of your schedule to join me for this conversation today. We're going to be talking about cultures of nice. And this is a conversation that I have been hosting with several different clients and organizations over the past few years. It's definitely a trend that I've been picking up on as I've been working with different client groups. And so today's conversation really is about that. It's about how do we diagnose a culture of nice and then what do we do about that if we do notice that our organization is becoming too nice. And so I want to welcome all of you for being here today. Thank you so much. Feel free to send me a question in the Q&A at any point in time. We'll save some time at the end for that, but feel free to pop a question in at any point in time or send a message to me in the chat if there's something that you're curious about as we're moving through our conversation today. And so I want to get started with with a question for you. And so do you ever notice yourself or your team, you know, sidestepping real issues, perhaps you're soft pedaling, you know, critical feedback, or perhaps in your environment at work, you avoid conversations altogether? Because many of the leaders that I work with as a coach and as a consultant and as a speaker, they tell me that, you know, this is something that is a challenge for them, that, you know, they admit to suffering from a culture of quote unquote nice, where people can be afraid to speak openly or certainly confront the behavior of other people because of a fear that they may rock the boat. And so, you know, when you think about a culture of nice, you know, it lends itself to a whole host of challenges, including, you know, an erosion of trust and increased turnover. Also, productivity begins to plummet, which none of those things are very nice, you know, when we're dealing with those things. And so, you know, instead, I know that all of you want better results. You want to keep your talent, you want to engage your teams, you want to build trust, and you want to provide your teams and your employees with a sense of purpose, you know, now I would say more so than ever before. And so we really want to empower our teams to be as efficient and productive as possible. And so how do we do that? I mean, that's really the question that we're here to talk about. How do we cultivate this kind of organization, this kind of culture, where we have strong open communication and where people are really focused on driving results and building strong relationships at the same time? And so that's really why we are here, is to have this conversation. And so hello, for those of you who are joining this call and maybe we haven't met before, I'll just spend a moment here to introduce myself. I'm Harriet Schumacher. I'm the CEO of BidLeap Leadership Inc. We have been serving leaders across the globe now since 2013. And I've been working in leadership development and leadership development and training and coaching my entire career. And I've had been fortunate enough to host thousands of conversations with leaders along that journey about really what it takes to build this kind of results-based culture. And when I say results-based culture, I don't just mean that we focus on the task all day long. I also mean that we have really strong, open, high trust relationships, and that we are open and transparent with each other. And that, you know, I really like to help leaders and teams find the courage to be authentic with each other. So professionally, I'm a certified executive coach. I am a mom of two daughters, and I'm also adapting to this new normal of having my kids at home, while I'm working today, funnily enough, I have like a sign posted on my office door right now, which says like, do not interrupt because we're having this conversation right now, but life happens. They may decide to, you know, not abide by the rules that I've set up for them right now, and they could interrupt us at any moment. But I'm based in Halifax, Nova Scotia. My company really does help to transform the conversations that are central to your success. That's what we really specialize in, is helping leaders and teams to talk about what matters most. I've been facilitating fierce conversations for 12 years, and I'm really excited to be able to share that tool with you. It's a game changer. It has radically altered the way that I approach my business. It is a strategy that I use. It's a foundation that I embed inside every organization that I work with, because if we can't talk about what matters, if we can't talk openly and honestly, then really nothing else matters. And so here's our agenda for our conversation that we're going to walk through today. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about, you know, what really is a culture of nice. I want to break it down and really help you to understand what that means, because, you know, we've got some context there that we need to work through. And we're going to show you some recent stats, some recent survey statistics that we have taken, and really helps us to understand just the business case for this, like how prevalent this culture of nice actually really is, and the costs and the prices we're paying as a result of that. We're also going to talk about, you know, how did we get here? So how did we arrive to this place, and what's causing this inside of our organizations? What is causing this quote unquote terminal niceness? And then I want to spend time at the end helping you to understand what it is that you can do about it. And so I want to give you some simple and specific next steps that you can take, you know, pretty much as soon as we hang up here, to start to transition your culture from a culture of nice to one of results. And then I'm going to give you some time for Q&A. But as, you know, questions pop up throughout our conversation today, like, please feel free to just chime in and pop them into the Q&A section here, or send me a message, send me a chat, and I will answer as we move forward. So let's get started. Let's get started with talking about what do we mean when we say culture of nice? Because I think that, you know, most of us intuitively know, you know, that a healthy organizational culture is important to business success. You know, they say culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? But there seems to be a bit of a debate about what actually constitutes healthy. So for me, you know, I have an opportunity to speak with leaders around the globe, and it's become very clear that there is an emerging trend in business today that may be contributing to this culture debate. And that trend is what we're here to talk about today. That trend is being nice. So when I ask leaders, how would you describe your culture? And whether that's your entire organization, or perhaps that's your intact team, the one that you work on or the one that you're responsible for leading, more and more often I'm hearing things like, well, you know, everyone is really pleasant to each other. We're really nice to each other. But, you know, you can tell through that conversation that there's a bit of hesitation, right? You can tell that there's an underlying issue. Something doesn't feel quite right. And so this response shows up time and time again. You know, so you might be noticing that perhaps we have turnover rates are high, or there seems to be a lot of tension in the air. Perhaps there's some undiscussables, you know, and as a former HR professional myself, when I hear this, all the red flags start to go up, because the word nice doesn't seem so nice in truth. It really concerns me when people say, well, it's a really nice place to work, or everybody's really nice to each other. I start to get my spidey sense kicking in, right? So before I go too far, I want to validate a few things for us. Most of us were raised to be nice. I mean, how is that true for you? You know, were you told to be nice to other people? I know I was, right? So we were taught to treat others with kindness and always play nice. So in business, we use phrases like kill them with kindness, or be a team player, or you can catch more flies with honey. So our childhood teachings have really translated into our adult beliefs. Being nice is good, right? Like, that's what we all learned. But here's my question. Is it possible to be too nice? Because we all know that too much of a good thing is too much of a good thing, right? So, you know, ice cream is a very good thing. Love ice cream. But destroying an entire gallon of Rocky Road in one sitting, not so good. Sharing our opinions at work, for example, good thing. But being that person that never gives anyone else a chance to speak because we're constantly running our mouth, not a good thing. So see what I mean? Too much of a good thing can sometimes not be a good thing. So the former CEO of the American Cancer Society, John Ceferin, once said, when managers are too nice, they're in fact not being nice at all. and they're doing a disservice to the people that they manage. So I want to pause with this for a second here and dig into really what this means. Because being nice does have its pros in the workplace. Of course, you know, genuinely nice people are easy to work with. We want people who are compassionate, who care about others, who have empathy, you know, and they tend to have pretty upstanding values, these kinds of people, right? So they're good people. So what's the problem here then? What is Seffrin really trying to say about being too nice? Because I think when someone is too nice in the workplace, their good traits can take on some not so good qualities. So let's see how this translates. So for example, being caring and caring about others can lead to an avoidance of conflict. So a really caring, empathic, compassionate person can also be afraid of conflict at the same time. And so that can look like an avoidance or failure to provide timely feedback. Specifically when an individual is underperforming because we worry we may hurt their feelings or worse, be seen as mean. I was having a coaching conversation with one of my coaching clients yesterday, and we were talking about their leadership development plan, and this leader wants to be perceived as a supportive and caring leader. And so when I had a conversation with him about, well, what does that actually look like in practice? It was really about having people's backs. But the thing that they omitted is that support also means challenging and providing feedback when things aren't going well. It's not only talking about the positive things, it's also giving guidance and corrective measures. So that was an interesting piece of data that validated this for me, just in a phone call that we had yesterday. So think about that. You know, are caring employees, do they tend to sometimes have an avoidance towards conflict or feedback? And so for how many of you on the call today feel like that's true for you? You know, being worried about being perceived as mean by other people. Or maybe you've got somebody on your team, or maybe it's yourself, you know, you perceive yourself as being easy to work with. I mean, that's an admirable trait. We all want to be perceived as easy to work with, but that can lead to a plight of never disagreeing or never saying no. I cannot tell you how many coaching clients that I have that I work with today that struggle with this issue, that have a real inability to be able to say no and are totally burned out, totally overwhelmed, but, you know, hang their hat on their capacity to be seen as easy to work with, right? And so, you know, if they're never saying no to anything, perhaps they're also not speaking up in a meeting, or maybe never offering a dissenting opinion, never debating anything. You know, even when that would be the responsible choice, because, you know, maybe things aren't going so well, but we're worried about people seeing us as difficult or not seeing us as a team player, or perhaps, you know, being perceived as a naysayer, right? And so I want to ask you, like, do these realities sound familiar? And so I want you to think about this for a second. I want to take a little poll, and I want you to take note of this for yourself right now. So how would you describe your organizational culture? And I want you to think about this. Is this internally inside your own team? Or you can take it broad strokes and look at your overall organizational culture. So what kind of culture? What's the current reality? How would you describe it? Would you say that we're too nice? That we avoid conflict and we say what others want to hear, not what needs to be said? Is that the reality from where you sit? Or we say yes far too often. And so we avoid conflict, kind of like the plague, like we don't talk about it at all. Or do we have a culture that is just right? You know, we're respectful, we're kind to each other, and we deal with issues clearly and directly as they arise. You know, whether they're performance related or otherwise, we don't hide behind anonymous surveys. We talk about things out in the open, and we really, you know, allow this healthy debate to exist. You know, we're kind of just right in terms of our culture. Or perhaps you're on the other end of the spectrum. You're feeling like you're really far too aggressive. We could actually use a bit more nice around here. You know, people don't shy away from conflict to the point that they leave mistrust, fear, and carnage in their path. And so I want you to think about this. How do you describe your team culture? How do you describe your organizational culture? What is the current reality? And so maybe some of you want to click all three of these. And maybe you want to vote for all three of these options. You know, our culture is hardly made up of one trait or one kind of person, right? We have a whole plethora of people and issues and struggles and challenges. So it can be messy and inherently human, right? So regardless of how you answered and what you think is going on inside your culture, my goal today is really to share some tools that will help you know, all of you be even more effective at healthy communication. And, you know, in the pursuit of balance between being, you know, nice and getting the results we want, I want you to get to that just right place. So let's focus a little bit more on the too nice category for a second here. And, you know, most of us who find ourselves in that space, in that culture of quote unquote nice, are there because we have all the right intentions. You know, we're there because we care about our company, we care about our team, we care about people, we care about results, and we want to build relationships with other people. You know, we don't want to hurt people's feelings. You know, we want to be seen as agreeable, you know, all of those things. So, right, it doesn't come from a bad place when we develop these too nice cultures. It usually comes from a place of wanting to be helpful and wanting to be supportive. But the question is this, you know, does your intent match your impact? And so let me dig into this a little bit further for you. So let's say someone refuses to talk with you about their workload being too much to handle because they want you as their leader to see them as a hard worker and a successful team player. You definitely have people on your team today who feel that way, guaranteed, okay? Maybe it's you. Maybe you don't want to talk to your boss about your workload either, okay? So just think about that. But the reality is that, you know, that their work is suffering, and maybe they're mentally suffering. Maybe they're emotionally suffering. You know, they're in over their heads because they just can't get through everything that is on their plate. And I can't tell you how much of a reality this is right now for all of us, right? We are all overwhelmed and in over our heads way more so than we were a month ago. And so does their intention meet their impact in that scenario? So, or perhaps you've been avoiding telling somebody on your team, maybe you have a client, maybe you have a customer, internal or an external customer, that's unhappy with the way that they've been managing things. And you don't want to upset your team member because, you know, there's a lot going on right now. You don't want to tell them, you know, you don't want to have a performance conversation or have a feedback conversation with them because you know that things are stressful at home right now. You know that there's, you know, we're kind of walking on eggshells. And so you just want to spare this person the bad news or the agony of hearing this message, right? But the result is that the person whom they're working with, you know, the account and the result there is really, you know, missing the mark. And so, you know, they're not pleased. The other person is not pleased on the other side of the table. And so does your intention meet that, your impact in that situation? So I want you to just think about this, that when we are, you know, what are we actually preventing when we avoid the conversations that need to take place? Because I believe that by avoiding the conversation in an effort to be nice or save somebody from embarrassment or hurt or frustration, you're actually guaranteeing more hurt and frustration. And it's a vicious cycle. So think about that. What are you trying to avoid when you're not having that conversation? And does your intent match your impact? So let's take a little closer look at this right now and look at what else a culture of niceness or quote unquote terminal niceness is actually costing your organization or your team right now. So Fierce recently conducted a survey on exactly this topic, and here's what they found. So they found that, you know, 8 out of 10 full-time employees admit they keep concerns to themselves at work because they want to be seen as nice by their colleagues and leadership. That's huge. 8 out of 10, 80% of people inside our organizations are not actually talking about what matters or talking about what's really going on from their perspective. That's huge because we're worried about how we're going to be perceived by other people. And I can tell you, I've hosted thousands of Fierce conversations over the years, and this is the number one issue that I have faced in class time and time again. And so just think about that right now on your team, 80% of your team is not being honest, is not coming to the plate and having an open conversation with you right now. So, you know, 80%, that's a huge number. 6 out of 10 employees said they have been fearful of voicing a concern at work. I mean, I would say that that's probably pretty accurate, right? So, you know, 60% of the people are worried about speaking up and speaking out and raising a concern at work. That's huge. I mean, we have issues at work that need to be resolved, right? And so I think we take a look and we break it down according to gender. There's only a very small gap between men and women. And we see that this also plays a role across all levels inside an organization. So not only is it impacting entry level, it also impacts C-suite and senior leaders inside of an organization. So, you know, statistics like these, we can begin to see the price we're paying organizationally. And I want you to think about that for yourself. What is the price that you're paying in your environment right now if 80% of your team is not expressing what's really going on from their perspective, if they're avoiding talking about what matters, right? So niceness prevents honesty. And so, you know, we see that this happens from level to level. 6 out of 10 employees say that they've been fearful of voicing a concern at work. This is a huge subset of people inside our organizations that are struggling with being able to be honest because they're worried about how they're going to be perceived. So many of us are really attached to wanting to be nice. And that is both true for both men and women. It is not something that just happens according to gender. It is really the human condition is what we're talking about here. So I think that there are really three big prices that we are paying based on these statistics. And think about this for your own team. I think the first one is the cost to talent. And, you know, when a manager is quote unquote too nice to an employee who isn't performing, or a peer refuses to give feedback to another peer that isn't pulling their weight, the bar for what is acceptable drops and our talent begins to follow, right? And so employees who were performing well or the colleagues who are taking on additional workload to make up for the lackluster performance of somebody else become frustrated, they become resentful and demotivated. So relationships begin to suffer, right? Turnover becomes higher or people check out, they might be staying, but they may not be fully engaged. They could be resentfully compliant, right? And so, you know, the talent that you're actually able to hold on to is typically those who are underperforming. And this is, you know, there's very little growth and development, which leads us to issue number two around productivity. So when we're not having these open, honest conversations, when we're avoiding talking about things in the out and open, when we're keeping things to ourselves, you know, we end up with a lower bar of productivity, right? Because the issues don't resolve themselves. They don't go away on their own. And so employees who are never, you know, told what they're doing wrong or what they could be doing better because a culture of nice prevails, understandably believe that they are doing great, right? And so they continue with the same behavior. And this leads to a plummet in productivity because they don't really know what they're doing wrong. They haven't been given that feedback. So over time, and again, because we don't want to upset the apple cart, we end up settling for mediocrity. And mediocre talent and mediocre work lead to mediocre results at best. And so that leads to, when we put these two things together, you know, we see the third cost, which is, you know, really losing time and money, which is the one thing right now that everybody is trying to get more of, right? Everybody is working for this at this very moment in time, trying to increase revenue, trying to increase productivity, and trying to get the most out of their people so that we can survive the short term and support us into the long term right now. So, you know, you think about the costs, turnover, retention, productivity, these costs are very expensive. So, you know, having to rework things, having stalled initiatives, having failed execution or unclear expectations are so expensive. And this list becomes very long, right? And every time that happens, this begins to hit our bottom line, which really decreases our ability to generate the results we want. So for ourselves as an organization and for the people that we serve. So I just really want you to think about, you know, what's the evidence that you have inside your organization right now, inside your team, that can lead you to being able to see what is the price that we are paying for this quote unquote niceness? You know, what are some of the things that you're noticing and what's some of the evidence that you can start to gather? Because I think in the end, you know, really what ends up happening when we're too nice is we have, you know, performance declines, relationships suffer, productivity, you know, really starts to go down. Trust begins to be eroded between everybody, right? Like we're not really having the open, honest conversations. And so that has a negative impact on our bottom line overall, which is already having enough of a hit as it is right now, given what's going on globally. So this is one thing that we can control to change that and to work against that tide, right? So, you know, we got to think about what's the anecdote here? Like, how do we resolve this? And it really is about having the conversations that are needed, not avoiding them. And that is the one thing that we can do is start to have these conversations. It's developing the skill, developing the knowledge to say what needs to be said, not just what enables us to be seen as nice. And so the tool that I've been using and I've been helping leaders and teams to work with to learn how to do that is Fierce Conversations. And, you know, what I've learned over the years is that we were never really taught how to have conversations, right? We just kind of fumble our way along, assuming that we're doing the right thing. And there is an approach that's effective, and there's some approaches that are ineffective. And so when you think about a fierce conversation, I want you to think about kind of what comes to mind here, because what we mean by a fierce conversation is this. It's one in which we come out from behind ourselves, we step into the conversation, and we make it real. So I want you to think about that for yourself. Like, how often, how many meetings have you been in this week alone or last week where you knew the real issues weren't being discussed? I want you to think about that. How many conversations have you been in over the last little while where we were not being real? So what does real mean? You know, what do we mean when we say real? So that would mean telling the truth. It would be not avoiding the conversations that need to happen. It would be being authentic and transparent and being vulnerable. And unreal, well, too much of the time, this is what we're engaged in. I mean, think about the costs associated with unreal conversations. You know, conversations in which we're not saying what's on our mind, we're not telling the full truth of the situation, when we're defaulting to playing nice. So if we're honest, we can probably acknowledge that being nice leans far more toward the unreal side of the spectrum than the real side. And as we've seen and discussed already, the costs associated with that are huge. So, you know, I really believe that conversations are the workhorse of all of your results. And I do believe that these types of conversations are the work of the leader. And it's the work of everybody on the team, but nobody's going to do this if you don't. You know, very much when in a team dynamic, it's the leader's job to model what accountability looks like. And so I want you to think about this. You know, what gets talked about in a company and how it gets talked about and who is invited to the conversation ultimately determines what will happen and what won't happen. And great leaders know this. They know that conversations are the essence. It's how we get everything done. So they invite in the real, open, honest conversations that are necessary to transform this culture. You know, to make the conversations happen, it's the fuel, it's the engine that leads to our results. And so that's the goal for sure. The goal here is to engage in these types of open, honest, real conversations on a daily basis, to make that our practice. And so what holds us back? You know, because if it was so easy, everybody would be doing it, right? So it's what we're not talking about that's really getting in the way. And we have a word for this. And the word is Mokita. And I want you to think about this for a second. We borrowed this word from Papua New Guinea. And Mokita means, you know, really the truth that everyone knows, but no one is speaking of. And so, you know, we call this kind of the elephant in the room. And New Guinea, they measure the health of their community based on the number of Mokitas that exist within it. So the more Mokitas, the less healthy the community. The fewer Mokitas, the more healthy the community. And, you know, why would that be? Well, when we're not having the conversations that matter, we carry that stress with us, right? That negative energy, that lack of authenticity inside of us, which leads to less trust, less integrity, more anxiety, higher blood pressure, none of which is nice at all. And so I'd encourage you later on, maybe as soon as this webinar has been completed, to take a few quiet minutes, and I want you to write down all the Mokitas that come to mind in your world right now. So think about it for your team. What are the topics that we are not talking about openly and honestly? What is not being discussed openly and honestly? Okay, I want you to think about that. And then I want you to think about, you know, what are the Mokitas maybe in your personal life at home? And then I want you to think about, as you write those down, you know, what are those Mokitas costing me? What are they costing my organization, my team, my family? What is the price that we're paying with these undiscussables, with these things that we're not bringing up because we're worried or we're fearful, right? Because when we inventory these Mokitas and we inventory the prices that we're paying for neglected conversation, it becomes pretty clear that things need to change, right? And that we need to get a conversation started. So how do we do that? Like, how do we create these types of cultures and home environments and families that are open and honest, that are brave and courageous, that are vulnerable and transparent? Again, it's by having the conversations. It's not by not having them, right? And choosing something else instead of choosing nice. And so at Fierce, we found that one of the best ways to do that is by holding onto one of our core ideas. And that is that the conversation is the relationship. So I want you to think about this for a second, because these two things are equal to each other, all right? So what I put into the conversation is what I get out of the relationship. If I put in honesty, authenticity, and fun into my conversations, what will I get out of the relationship? Yeah, I'm going to get honest. I'm going to get honesty. I'm going to get the same, right? I'm going to get more authenticity and fun. If I withhold what I'm really thinking and feeling, chances are high that the people around me are doing the same thing. So if you or I add one more thing to the list of topics we can't discuss because it will ruin a meeting at work or a weekend at home, it's not too long before all the possibilities for that relationship start to get smaller. And the two people in the relationship then become smaller. I get smaller and smaller until I'm not that much bigger than the space around my shoes. You know, having 2 to 3 minute conversations that are completely empty of meaning. And so when I'm not having the conversations that are needed, it's the relationship that suffers. So the conversation is the relationship. I want you to think of this C equals R. What you put into the conversation is what you get out of the relationship. And so when I begin to realize that a relationship isn't where I want it to be, where I wish it was, all I have to do is ask myself, what conversations are missing? Like, what are we not talking about? What conversations am I avoiding? You know, it's easy to be able to pull ourselves back and say, okay, well, what's the topic that we're not bringing up? And what's happening to our relationship as a result of that, right? So you can look at this as a diagnostic tool, a way to be able to assess the status of your relationships. And I want you to look at this another way, because if conversation equals relationship, then relationships are your culture. And so just as, you know, C equals R helps us to diagnose what conversations are needed in relationships, relationships equal culture helps us diagnose what is needed inside our culture. So it's possible you're thinking, okay, this sounds great, but I can't change the whole culture. You know, I'm only one person. There isn't anything I can do to make that kind of transformation possible. I get it. That seems overwhelming when you start processing the amount of conversations that you have in front of you. But here's the good news. You know, culture does not live outside of you. Every single day, every one of us is building the culture. You know, you are the culture. You choose it in the conversation you have or don't have. And even more as a leader, you model and reinforce that culture every time you interact with others. People will follow your lead. If you are not having the conversations needed, neither will they. But the reverse is also true. So I want you to ask yourself, what kind of culture do you want to be a part of? And what does it require of me? What does it require of you? Because these two questions help us focus on actionable, strategic steps that we can take right away that make a difference. In fact, I can have the conversation with myself. I can say, you know, really, if I want to have a culture that's open and transparent, if that's really what I want on my team, then what's my role in creating that? It puts the control back in our hands, right? Because I really believe that if it is to be, it is up to me, right? And yeah, for sure, there are going to be some things that are out of my control, but not the conversations that are mine to have. You know, these are the conversations that are up to me to lead that will ultimately impact my relationships, which over time will change the culture. So if it is to be, it is up to me. So we, you know, we really understand, and definitely that's something that I've come to really truly understand, that conversations matter. And that we need to be having them instead of avoiding them. That choosing nice probably isn't serving us so well. While it's admirable, you know, I get it, it's probably not helping you to build the kind of culture that you really want to create. And so if we acknowledge that conversations equal the relationships, and that relationships ultimately are our culture, that's what those two things work hand in hand. So what can we do to start to make this shift? How do we transform our cultures from this quote unquote nice culture to one of results? Now, what are some specific steps that you can begin to take? You know, what can we start to step into to shift this? Because I bet that this is probably a missing link for a lot of you in order to be able to create some change and drive our cultures into a place of results. And so I want you to think about this. You know, every single one of us, you and everybody on your team, has a context filter. And I want you to think of a context filter like a lens through which we view and interpret everything that happens to us every single day. It's made up of our opinions, it's made up of our attitudes and our beliefs. But we hold on to these long enough, they become our truths with a capital T. So we tend to reject, like, and, you know, bounce off anything that does not align with our truth, right? So it doesn't align with our context. And we let in things which validate it. And so for the most part, this process, this filter is really an unconscious thing. You know, it's deeply embedded in our subconscious. We don't even really know that it's functioning. But let me walk you through like a real life example of how this plays out at work, right? So I want you to think about this for a second. Have you ever had a time when you really didn't like somebody that you worked with? You know, I'm hoping that this might've just been in high school. Maybe it wasn't yesterday, but you know, I'll let you decide. You know, I've certainly ran into people that I don't like very much, right? Or have had challenging relationships with people at work. And so now I want you to imagine that you found out that this person that you don't like did something amazing. You know, maybe they get an award. So how do you spin that? What do you think about that? You have a really negative context about this person. They do something amazing. You know, do you buy into that? You know, you think probably, like all of us do, we think that that's a fluke. There's a catch. They tricked somebody, you know, whatever. You know, we put a negative spin on it. It bounces right off your context filter because it's not in alignment with the opinion or the attitude, the beliefs that you hold about this person. So now let's say this person, somebody else, you know, maybe a friend of this person, comes to you and tells you something so awesome that this person did. You know, maybe it's a colleague. They come to you and they say, oh, did you hear about, you know, John and the project that they were working on? It's just been so amazing. Like they've totally changed our lives and made it for the better. And now what do you think about that person, right? They're like, oh my goodness, they fooled you too. And I'm, oh, I was going to go for lunch with you today, but maybe I'm not going to, or I'm not going to have that phone call with you today. I don't trust you, right? It bounces off your context filter as well. Because you reject what you've heard because it doesn't align with your lens, your perspective of that person. So now imagine that that person who you have a very negative context of, the person that you don't really like very much, drops the ball. Like they fail miserably. They make a mistake. Now what do you think? Well, of course you buy into that. Of course you see that. Of course you believe that. It was only a matter of time is kind of what you say to yourself, right? You're like, I knew I was right about this person, right? It makes you right through your context filter because it does align with your opinions, attitudes, and beliefs. You were right. So here's the deal. It's pretty easy to prove yourself right. If you believe the world is a horrible place, you can find all kinds of data to back that up. But if you believe that the world is a miracle, you believe that it's a really positive environment and that change is happening all around us, and that's a beautiful thing, then you can find all kinds of data to back that up as well. The point I'm trying to make here is that any context can be justified. What you look for, you will find. And so I'm not really looking to find out with people whether you're right about your opinion or not. I'm really not that concerned with that. I'm really not looking to prove how right I am. What I want all of us to start to work on is, you know, whether or not you're getting the results that you want individually and as an organization, because you can have all kinds of evidence to back up why you're right about something. I always tell people when I'm training and coaching them is that, you know, you don't have to have a conversation with anybody to be right. You can be right by yourself. So let me just repeat this for a second here, just to be clear. It's not about whether or not you can justify your context. It's about whether or not you're getting the results that you want. And so I want you to look at how this context filter contributes to building these cultures of nice. And so here's my context. Here's what I believe to be true. Here's what I feel like I'm right about, okay? Let's just say that I believe, and maybe this is you, or maybe this is somebody on your team. They believe that I can't say what I really want to say. I can't say what I really need to because I will be perceived as mean or insensitive or too opinionated. There are people on your team who believe that today, and perhaps that is also you, right? Or I'll be misunderstood and things will get worse instead of better. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut, right? Because nice seems to be the safer choice, right? So because that's my belief, because that's my opinion, because that's my context, so what kind of assessment do I make? What do I notice around me? Well, I see other people who've been more blunt or truthful and things that didn't go so well for them. I see my colleagues sidestepping real issues. I see that leaders avoid talking about what needs to be named. I hear, you know, sidebar meetings happening, chatting offline because people don't say what they really want to say in a meeting, right? So everybody's really nice around here, so I should be nice too. And if these are the things that I assess, if I gather evidence to make myself right about that, then what are my emotions? What am I feeling? Well, I could be feeling frustrated. I could be feeling fear or apathy, or I could be feeling anxiety. So then what am I doing? So if that's what's happening with all these emotions, with this evidence that I've gathered, with this opinion that I hold, then what will my behavior be? Well, I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to speak up. I'm not going to rock the boat. You know, maybe I'll only have that conversation with quote unquote people that I trust, but I won't tell the truth or demonstrate courage or be fierce in the moment. And so the result, more of the same, more avoidance of conversations, more niceness, more beating around the bush, more sidestepping issues, more of the same, right? Which just reinforces my context that I was right to begin with. I'm right. I can't really speak my mind. This is working for me, right? So that's how this happens, right? It's really a self-perpetuating loop because our context impacts our results over and over again. It's a self-reinforcing, self-limiting system. So how do we change this? You know, what are we supposed to do? What's the answer? What can we do differently? And so what if we were to use our understanding of the context filter to get different results? And so I want to try this one more time. And I encourage all of you who are watching here right now to take a picture of the slide that is in front of you right now. I want you to try this one more time. And let's flip this cycle on its head for a second. So context. It's true, we have a culture of nice, but I realize that I need to start demonstrating more courage and more truth-telling. That is what is required of me. And so, you know, Harriet told me conversation is the relationship and relationships are the culture. So if it is to be, it's got to be up to me. That is the belief that I need to hold. So now what am I going to assess with that belief? Well, I'm going to be looking for more opportunities in which I can at least try to speak my mind. You know, I acknowledge that I have coworkers with whom, you know, I could give some feedback so that they could perform better. There are some people on my team who need some feedback. You know, I'm going to sit in meetings and realize that I could offer my opinion, even if it's not the most popular one. And so what am I going to feel? Well, I'm probably still going to be a little bit fearful, but I'm also curious to see what's going to happen when I do this. I'm going to be slightly hopeful that this is going to create some positive change, right? I'm going to be tipping the tides. And my behavior, well, I'm going to start risking. I'm going to start trying. I am going to be having conversations instead of avoiding them. They will not be perfect, but I am making progress. I am doing something different than what I was doing before. And the results, well, I'm going to start to see that the caliber of my conversations begins to change. Relationships change. And bit by bit over time, the culture changes. And I would bet, based on experience of working with other leaders doing this, that you will begin to realize that it was never as big of an issue as you thought it was, right? That a lot of it was just story that you were telling yourself that was getting in the way, right? And so then that's going to feed into that context that, oh my goodness, you know, really having conversations is the work of the leader. It is my job. This is the kind of culture that we can create. And so you can do this for yourself, maybe even later today. And as I said, take a screenshot of this slide. And then I want you to go back to those Mokitas that you wrote down, those elephants in the room, those things that everyone knows, but no one is talking about. And I want you to choose even one of them and walk yourself through this cycle. And I want you to think about how that Mokita might be impacting your context. What are you assessing? What are your emotions? What is your behavior and your results or lack thereof? And then I want you to work through that cycle a second time, just like I did, shifting your context. So imagine, for example, that Mokita didn't exist. What if you named it instead of avoiding it? What if you just brought it up? You know, what if you were having the conversations needed with courage and skill? What would your new context be? What would you begin to assess and notice? What kind of evidence would you gather? What would you be feeling? How would you behave? And what results would you experience? And then how about your team? How about your company as a whole? Because I think we need to recognize the power of our context. Context is everything. It is running your life. And so you can choose to gather evidence to make yourself right about your context, or you can choose curiosity over justifying yourself. And we will get different, often better results when we choose to do that. And even more, you know, we can really begin to realize and acknowledge that everyone else has a context filter too, right? And it's different from ours. And, you know, we can really let go of our need to be right about our opinions and attitudes. We can really start to shift our culture from one of being nice or one of being right to one of results. And so here's a super simple context shift that I want all of you to make today. I want you to replace the word nice with being in service. And I want you to think about that is what is required from all of us as leaders today is to be in service. And that means that, you know, when we become being in service, when we make that our focus, we're not going to avoid conversations. Instead, we're going to step into them with intention and purpose. We're going to really provide constructive feedback. We're going to know that it will develop and strengthen our direct reports and our peers. Because when being in service becomes our focus, we're far more apt to express our opinion or our perspectives in a conversation, in a meeting, without watering it down or worrying about how we will be perceived, because we no longer feel the need to walk on eggshells. And finally, I want you to remember this, that while no single conversation is guaranteed to change the trajectory of a career, a company, a relationship, or a life, any single conversation can. You know, the whole organization does not have to be on board in order for this change to occur. You need to be on board. That's it. You need to say, conversations are my job, my role to navigate this, right? And the whole culture doesn't have to change in order for you to do this. You need to change. And every bit of this happens one conversation at a time. Take it one conversation at a time and ask yourself, am I being real? Am I stepping out from behind myself? And am I making this conversation real? Are we talking about what is really going on here? So here's where we've been. Here's some tips and takeaways. And I encourage you to take a picture of this slide as well. I really want you to think about, what are the prices that you're paying right now? If you have a culture of nice, so how prevalent actually is that inside your team or your organization, and how much is it costing you today? And what will happen if that doesn't change, right? What's going to happen? What does the future look like if that doesn't change? I want you to think about the anecdote that having conversations that matter and the ones that kind of make a difference, rather than the avoidance of open, honest conversations. I want you to think about this equation that conversation equals relationship and relationship equals culture. And I really want you to think, if it is to be, it is up to me. And that's something that I want to encourage you to be communicating with your teams and really helping people to recognize how much power they actually have to be able to navigate the uncertainty that is in front of them right now. I want you to focus on your context filter, because we explored that, and the way in which context is constantly influencing our results and how we can get different and better results by challenging our context, right? And I really want you to think about replacing the word nice with being in service as your context as a leader today and in the future, and how that would just have you showing up differently from conversation to conversation. So that's a lot of information that we've covered. And I want to just open up any questions that you might have just as I'm wrapping up here right now. But, you know, summing it all up, I would say this, you know, when real open, transparent conversations happen, when employees and leaders come together to share their perspectives, ask tough questions, tackle tough challenges, and actually have the conversations that are needed instead of avoiding them, we build a shared culture with increased engagement and so much more accountability, so much more purpose, so much more connection. And at the end of the day, we really finally make this shift from building this culture of terminal niceness to one of results. And so it's been really my hope that the past, 45 minutes or so has given you a bit more courage and hopefully some encouragement to start to reframe the conversations that are in front of you today, to step into the single conversations one at a time. I want you to focus on being brave and courageous. I want you to focus on naming and getting rid of those mosquitoes, and to say what needs to be said and to be in service instead of defaulting to being nice. And I want you to start to notice the shift, how things shift within you and how things start to shift within your relationships and within your teams at work. Now, one of the ways that I've been offering to show up and be in service to leaders and teams, now that we have all transitioned into this remote working reality, is to help leaders and teams to be able to have these conversations virtually. Because I know that that's a whole new reality for a lot of teams. And, you know, remote work comes with its own host of challenges. There can be a lot of things that can crop up. And so if you feel like your team needs to learn how to communicate from a distance, I believe that fierce conversations shorten the distance that we experience with each other. And so this is a tool that I have created that I'm making available to you to equip your teams with the skills that are required to have the conversations that matter now more than ever. And so really to learn how to have effective team meetings from a distance, how do we engage in those types of group conversations so that we can really focus on being results oriented than being nice, how do we coach and give feedback to each other from a distance? And ultimately, how do we come together and become more accountable to each other to ensure that we stay productive and ensure that we stay engaged? Because we don't know how long this is going to go on for, and we need new strategies, new ways of showing up given this new reality. And so this is a workshop that's available for a group of up to 25, or it can be done individually. If it's something that you might be curious about and you want to have a conversation about what this looks like, then feel free to reach out to me at the end of this webinar, send me a message, or you can request more info with this link here right on the slide, slide deck here, bigleapleadership.com/fierce-remote, or send me an email at harriet@bigleapleadership.com, and I can share more about what the learning outcomes are for this module and work together to create a solution that works for you and your team. If you're noticing that conversations is a missing link inside your organization right now or inside your team now that you're working from a distance. So I want to say thank you so much for being here, and see, are there any questions that are going to pop up right now? Any questions from anybody that's here on the call? I'd love to take them. Feel free to pop them into the Q&A section here. Otherwise, if there's no questions, thanks for being here. And I hope that you got some value out of this conversation today and really take those takeaways and really go and think about how you can apply them to make your conversations better today and in the future. It's been my pleasure to be able to be in this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for being here. Take care. Bye-bye.